This is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Our guest, Jeff Benjamin, has worked in the food industry, including a stint as a server and as a restaurant manager since he was a teenager. And he has some advice for diners. Don't steal the silverware or the glassware or even the sweet and low. Don't hit on the server. Never berate the staff. Don't make a reservation and not show up. That's from his new book called Front of the House, Restaurant Manners, Misbehaviors, and Secrets. Benjamin is managing partner with famed chef Mark Vetri. They have six popular Italian restaurants in Philadelphia and in New Jersey. He has devoted his career to mastering the fine art of dining service, and he joins us here in our Philadelphia studio. Jeff Benjamin, nice to have you with us on Radio Time.
Great to be here. Thank you.
You say in the book that the chef is the quarterback.
That's
and
true.
You have Mark Vetri as your quarterback. So if the chef is the quarterback, what is the manager?
I actually just last night I watched the movie The Blind Side, so I think I may be his blocker.
You got your metaphors all straightened up there.
Yeah, you know, I think that the manager has to be the blocker, and at any given time could also be the head coach. It's a multifaceted job. You know, you need to do a lot of diplomacy between the back of the house and the front of the house, as well as the guests.
You say that hospitality, or I guess maybe even service, sort of built into your genes, just kind of part of your personality.
I think so. I think a desire to please people, a desire to have fun doing it, and this kind of overwhelming sense of joy I get at the end of a day when I
really?
Know that we've
even
made
today?
People happy. Especially today. The more I have an increased size of staff as well as an increased constituency that we service every night, I'm like, wow, that was a really good day. And coupled with, you know, the fact that we have a nonprofit that we operate, that I really get to make an impact, I think it's gratifying.
Were you a good server? I'm somewhat so much older than you. I was a waitress, but were you a good server when you were
a server? I'd like to think so. You know, I really always had this kind of goal to please. And I worked in a private country club for a while. So I saw the same guests day in and day out every day of the summer. And oftentimes twice a day, once during the turn at the 18th, before the 18th hole, and then once at night. And so I got to know them quite a bit, and I'd like to think that they appreciated me.
You have a story about a woman that used to wait on a lot there and always gave her a cookie for
the cookies.
and you weren't there one night and you panicked because Mrs. So-and-so wasn't going to get her cookie.
Yeah, Mrs. Schwartz, it was the end of a summer, and every Friday night she got cookies for dessert, and every Friday night she asked where her cookies were if I didn't get them out quick enough. And it became a joke amongst the staff. They didn't realize that I was taking it so seriously.
So what does it take to be a good manager? I mean, what are the qualities you think for managing a restaurant? And a restaurant is a complicated place, or can be a complicated place.
Sure. You know, I think almost anything can be complicated if you make it so. You need to break it down to its lowest common denominators, right? So you can't just look at it as this massive mechanism, but you need to first off have a great support staff. And that support staff is from dishwasher, busboy, cook, server, you know, everybody, and they all need to be on the same page. It's very important that everyone knows going into service for a given night what all our expectations are. What are the guests' expectations? What are my expectations of them? We do a pre-shift meeting that I mentioned quite a bit in the book, that it's imperative if you're running a restaurant to have a pre-shift meeting. Every day something changes, whether it be a menu item, whether you have a new staff member, whether you have a guest coming in who last time they were in weren't so pleased, and we want to make sure we note that to the server who's going to service them.
You also say empathy. I thought that was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. that empathy is an important quality to have in this kind of work.
Absolutely. You know, you don't know where people are coming from, both the guest and sometimes the service staff. And it's real easy as an employer to say, you know, leave your troubles at home. Once you're at work, you're at work. But we're humans, you know. And so if you're going through something and it is going to affect your work day, just come right to me and say, hey, listen, I've got something going on right now. I'd still like to work tonight. How do we do this? But, you know, I can't just say, well, too bad, you're at work now. And with guests, I don't know who's arriving because they're on a first date, or who's on an anniversary date, or who unfortunately just left a funeral and had to get a bite to eat.
One of the things I liked in this book, and you have some advice both for servers and also for people who go to restaurants, which is a server is not a servant.
Absolutely.
And you just rolled your eyes at me.
Yeah.
I mean, do you see a lot of that?
Less and less. You know, when I was a server, I saw it quite a bit, and it was that thing that drove me to succeed because I wanted to prove these folks who were treating me that way wrong. Yeah. And so I guess I am a little bit more sympathetic to our service staff who do get treated that way. And you still occasionally get the person who snaps at a server or who feels
like
it's okay to
snap
their fingers. Yeah.
Wow.
And those who feel it's okay to yell at them or blame them for literally everything that's going on. And you know, we're here to service them, mm-hmm. and we are guest service agents, but we are never servants, and please remember that.
In fact, you're professionals.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think if you go particularly to Europe, you see the people that are servers or work in restaurants. This is a lifelong profession for them.
Correct. And, you know, when Mark first came back from Europe,
Mark Vetri,
and decided that we would open up this restaurant together, we did base it a bit pretty much on the European model. And a lot of that has to do with the employer. You know, let's instill in our staff this sense that you can make a living doing this. And we're actually one of the few industries where you still can pretty much go right from high school into our mm-hmm. industry and be ultra successful, both financially and just from a job satisfaction standpoint. And, you know, part of it is offering things other than just money, you know, having a health plan, having a 401k. Making sure that they stick around. But there's also – it's incumbent upon the guest to treat us like professionals, and we'll stick around for you as well.
You have a long list here. It's called Taking Orders. How does she remember what everyone ordered without all writing it down? I've often wondered about that as well. But you have about 20 things that happens that the waiter, waitress, server has to deal with. And these mm-hmm. are, you know, the sort of everything from greeting someone, taking their drink orders, and all the steps in between.
And at multiple tables. So let's remember that once you place your order, we know that hospitality time kicks in.
Right.
So you've placed your order, and now you know how many minutes have passed since you placed your order. But what you may not know, or at least don't know in your forward thinking, maybe in your subconscious it exists, is all the other things that server needs to get done before that order actually hits the cook. You know, we have to type it in. In 2015, it's all electronic. But remember, there was a time, especially when we first opened Vetri, everything's handwritten.
Sure.
We had to hand it to a chef
sure.
who also had other guests' orders coming in. And oftentimes, the server will get stopped on their way to the POS system to put it in. And, hey, can you run and get this? Oh, sure, I can get it. Now, we're human, so occasionally we even forget to put it in on time.
But how do you remember without writing it down? What's the secret to that?
You know, I don't think there's any one secret. I used to have little kind of mnemonic devices in my head as I was – I could take a table of six at Vetri and I could remember their order for the most part. And oftentimes the biggest key for any server who doesn't use pencil and paper is they need to look you in the eye, because you have a tendency to remember more of what someone says to you when you've been staring at them. If you're not paying attention and you're looking around the room, you're not zoned in. But if I zone in on you and I say, wow, the woman with the glasses at position six just ordered this, this, and this, that'll not leave my mind by the time I get to the POS station.
Oh, that's impressive. You have a section about open table coming and saying, you know, we want to be able to basically do the reservations mm-hmm. at your restaurant. And you said not so fast.
I was skeptical. And I think I even mentioned in there, thank God I can run a restaurant because I have nothing to do with technology. And remember, at the time, I also wasn't certain that the internet was going to take off.
This was a while ago.
But, you know, I'm still very wary about folks who come in and say, I have this piece of technology that will replace an employee. Because you've got to remember that I also am in the industry, one of the very few industries that cannot become victim to enjoying what we do virtually. You have to come to us in real time. And I don't ever want to remove that from what we do. If you can make it easier or make mm-hmm. us more efficient, I'm happy to sit and talk to you. But one of the original pushes was you get to eliminate staff members. You won't need a hostess. I'm like, I would like to have more hostesses. Now that I have this technology, let's put more in there. We can answer phones quicker. We can talk to the guests more frequently. I didn't want to go the other way.
And the idea – and I have to say I'm kind of old-fashioned in that I've used Open Table, but I actually do prefer to call. I don't know why. I mean, maybe it is just hearing that human voice on the other end of the phone or hearing the hubbub in the background.
You know, I hope you're right. I generally call to make reservations as well. I also know that restaurants are paying per cover on the Open Table. But, and I use Open Table, you know, when I can, if I'm on a mobile device or if I'm in a town that I'm not familiar with. But, you know, like you said, you know, I want to talk to someone. And I think that there's still people in our generation who probably think, I did it online. Did it go through? Did it happen? Did it really happen?
Right.
You know, this way I've spoken to someone. You know, the big thing with guest service – is that we frequently will call someone and the first thing we'll do is ask the guest service agent their name, just in case I need to complain later.
I think we
still probably have that in our – I think the millennials are probably much more tuned into the efficiencies.
How common is it, you think, for people – or how common is it for people to make a reservation and not show up? I mean, is that
– far too common,
really?
Still.
Like 10% of the time?
Not or? Quite as big. There was a period of time where it was that high.
Wow.
And
not
I will
even
say
call to
open
cancel.
Tables helped a little bit with that. We can do more. And I think it's – we get that things happen. Life happens. You may not be able to come. But the common courtesy, especially in 2015 when everyone's got a cell phone and no one's ever unplugged, you can pick up the phone and say, we're not going to make it tonight. It is invaluable. That piece of real estate that I need to sell you, that you've got a 7:30 reservation for 4 and you don't come. And I've got somebody who walked in and said, can you seat me now? And I say no. Mm-hmm. It's just not lack of courtesy.
What do you think about cell phones on the table?
Yeah. I'm a parent.
You can't get around it.
Babysitters call. Pre-cell phone, we had a babysitter. My wife and I were out for one of our first date nights after our second child, and we actually got a call from the babysitter at the restaurant that we needed to come home. And, if I had a cell phone, I would have had it on the table at the time. So I don't – once again, it's a courtesy thing though.
Right.
If you're sitting in a room full of other people – if you ride on the subway or sit on an Amtrak, speak a little softer. Get up and excuse yourself from the table. All we're asking for is courtesy. I think more offensive to me as a human, not as a restaurateur, is watching folks who ignore each other by sitting and texting or tweeting at the table. I'd rather them enjoy each other's company and enjoy our food more, but that's on me.
Do you have a favorite time at a restaurant?
I don't know that I could say I have a favorite time of the service. I do enjoy the beginning of the night when it's all kind of getting started.
It's like 5:30 or something like
just,
that.
It's just the first couple reservations. There was a time back when Vetri first opened that was the time of day where I wondered if anyone was going to show up. So, I think we've crossed that a little bit. But, I enjoy when I walk around our busy dining room. Especially since I make my rounds every night and I'll walk in the middle of service sometimes and I'll see a server come running up to me and say, table 62 wants to meet you. I'm like, that's awesome. I can't wait to help make their day and let's talk to them. It's fun.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Jeff Benjamin, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. He's written a book called Front of the House and it's subtitled Restaurant Manners, Misbehaviors, and Secrets. He's managing partner of the Vetri family of 6 restaurants here in Philadelphia, also in New Jersey. And he and Mark Vetri, who is a chef, have been working together since 1998. They also do some nonprofit work as well. We want to hear from you about your dining or perhaps serving experiences. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Much more after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. It's pretty much a given that the important ingredient of a successful restaurant is the cooking, but also what matters is the quality of the dining experience. Are reservations honored? Is the wait staff friendly and helpful? Do you feel like a welcome guest? And our guest, Jeff Benjamin, writes about all of this in his new book. It's called Front of the House. And again, we'd like to hear from you. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Any stories, comments about being a diner, an eater, or a server. You do include in this book a number of stories about really difficult customers. I mean, people that are demanding and frankly insulting to staff, mm-hmm. insulting to the people that work at one of your restaurants.
Yep. And part of the reason for including that is also how we deal with it, because that's going to happen in life. You're going to come across people who may be, like I said earlier, may have just come off of something devastating to them and they're already in a bad mood. So, to not be overly judgmental as to why they're doing what they're doing, but to remember we're here to serve.
Right.
It's incumbent upon the guest to also have a certain amount of decorum, right? And when they don't, it is not out of the question for us to call them out on it.
Right. How do you do that?
Well, diplomatically, you know, got to remember that we're still in the service industry. And no matter what we do, and even if we feel we're right doing it, perception is reality. And when you have a guest walk through your door the opposite direction, whatever their last perception of you and how you handle their situation is the reality to them. And they're going to go tell a lot of people. And now in the internet age, they're going to tweet a lot of people or Yelp a lot of people. So you got to make sure we handle it correctly. You know, I jokingly call one of our staff members the jerk whisperer.
Yes, you do.
And the truth is he's very good at it. He speaks very calmly to a guest who's getting irate, and it generally tones the guest down because nothing worse than being the only yeller in an altercation.
In fact, you say, and I think this is good advice for the rest of life, which is speaking in a very quiet voice kind of brings down the decibel level or
perhaps
even the anger level.
Very calming effect. Yeah. And, you know, try not to be too patronizing. You know, I've never espoused that the customer is always right, because sometimes people are wrong. They're human beings. But the customer is always the customer. And I mentioned that in the book, that just got to remember that they still can be our customer. And there's actually no greater satisfaction to us than turning around a customer who started off angry. It's actually sometimes a little more difficult, one who's got their expectations so high, meeting that. But when you've got a guy who's already just pissed off at the world, you know, we can make him happy.
Can you tell when someone walks in the door when you might say to yourself, uh-oh, here comes one?
Right at the front door. You know, the tone in their voice when they announce that they have – I have a reservation. I'm 15 minutes late, but you can seat me, right? Or, yeah, of course, we're going to do our best. And it may be a couple minutes. I'm going to move some tables around. Not, you know, not a problem. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you look at that and you're like, from Jump Street, they've already gotten into it with the hostess, and now what are we going to do?
You have 8 ways to be a desirable customer. One is don't steal, and you do include in this sweet and low. Do people steal sweet and low?
They do. And you look, it sounded petty of me when I wrote it, but I left it in there because it drives the point home that a whole lot goes into the economics of a restaurant and, you know, plate cost and things like that.
Are people stealing plates and silverware? And
they
glasses?
Are. Silverware quite a bit. Glassware, especially our logoed glassware at Alaspina, which is pretty cool looking glassware, but we do sell it for $12 a glass, so I can't imagine why you would feel comfortable taking it. You know, the sweet and low is an easy one. Look, it doesn't cost, right? It's pennies.
Right.
But, you know, aggregated over time when you constantly have to replace stuff like that. But look, you know, that was a little bit of hyperbole, but just to let you know, look, we paid for it.
Don't blame the messenger.
Absolutely.
What is that? I mean, messenger meaning the server?
The server. You know, there are things that happen. We can't 100% of the time know exactly how many burgers we're going to sell on a given night, and we may run out. Right. We don't want to, and we do our best to have an alternative in mind before we even let you know that what you wanted is not available tonight, or that the time of your reservation, the host staff gets the brunt of a lot of this.
I bet they do.
And so you call to make a reservation. Well, I want a 7 o'clock. Sir, I'm happy to get you what I can get you, but 7:30 is right now the best I can do. I'm happy to call you if 7 opens up. I want 7. Do I have to call Jeff? Well, you know, sure. Feel free to call Jeff. He'll try and help you as much as I have too.
And is that the jerk whisperer?
No, I'm Jeff.
I'm not sure if there's another Jeff.
No, okay. Steve's the jerk whisperer.
Okay. Don't assume we're not professionals. We talked about this earlier, which is people that work in restaurants are professionals.
Right. And and like I said, the European model really helps. And because we have so many guests that do travel these days, it's become less of an issue. But don't just look at your server and say, well, what do you do during the day? You must be in school. Well, maybe they've chosen the restaurant profession. It's what I did. And I think it's treated me very well. And we hopefully have – I mean, I have service staff at Vetri, for example, who've been with me for 7, 8, 9 years. They're going to be with me for a while, and they have a nice retirement plan and hopefully a good family.
We talked about manners. You said, you know, you should never snap your fingers. I can't imagine doing that to a server. But nonetheless, you say don't leave your manners at home.
Right.
Is that a problem?
It is. And again, some of it is subconscious. You know, you're in your zone at your table of 4. You don't really recognize that there's other tables in the restaurant sometimes. You know, oftentimes we see it in not so much in our restaurants, but, you know, when families come in with kids who may need to go for a walk. They may have passed their bedtime. Be aware of who's around you and what you're doing. But be aware that you're a guest in my home.
Do you think price matters? I mean, the more sort of expensive a meal is, the more people are going to demand better service?
To some extent. I think reputation matters as well. the very good news is my partner Mark Vetri is a pretty well known chef. But because of that, the somewhat bad news is that he's a well known chef,
right.
And they have a certain expectation. I mean, for years, chefs only owned one restaurant, and when they started to open 2, 3, 4, it was clear that they weren't in their kitchen that you wanted them in. Well, Mark wasn't here tonight. Clearly the food wasn't as good. Well, of course it was good, but you've got this perception. So we have certain expectations we need to meet.
You also say don't hit on the server, and then you say, I mean ever.
Yeah.
Is that a common thing?
A little less so, for example, at Vetri, we have a little more casual spots, that it does happen. And it's an uncomfortable situation for everybody. The server, you as the guest, once you realize what you've done, and the manager who has to kind of diplomatically say, she's here to wait on you, and you can have fun and be familial, but it's uncomfortable.
And you also say don't pull the Yelp card.
Yeah.
I mean, this is where people can go online and
they can just anonymously complain to just about anybody in the world. And, to look at me in my own home and say to me, I'm going to Yelp about this unless you fix it.
Well, people say that?
Oh, sure. And I don't need a threat. I want to fix – my job is to fix your problem. So regardless of whether you threaten me or not, I'm going to work my butt off to make sure that you're satisfied. I don't need you to tell me that you can tell a million people. I'm well aware of the fact.
We have an email from Anastasia. She says, as a former waitress, I agree with your guest's suggestion to diners. As a restaurant diner, I wish servers would please stop saying not a problem in response to a request. That phrase makes me think of something really is a problem.
Exactly. I think that's a perfect point. And I was actually talking to someone else, a business person who was just talking about small business in general, that not a problem is a big cop-out.
What's a better thing to say?
I can handle that, or let me take care of that for you.
A more positive way of saying
it. Very positive. And like I said to you during the break, to indicate that it was a problem indicates that we could be in disaster zone. And right. At the end of the day, we're serving you a meal, and hopefully one that you love and want to have again. You're going to have 700 some odd meals this year.
Do you like diners to ask the server, well, what do you like? What do you suggest?
One of my least favorite things. With caveat, I enjoy that they want the interaction with the service staff, but I don't have the same taste buds as you. I don't know what you're in the mood for. So typically what we would want our service staff to come back at you with is, well, what types of things do you normally order? Or right. What kind of mood are you in? Or what do you typically order when you go out? And then I can assist you. But to have a service staff member come up and say to you, these are a few of my favorite things on the menu. Well, you're not eating with me.
That's true. An email from Cameron. Is it ever acceptable to eat your own food at a restaurant? If you came in to eat lunch, bought a coffee, and then ate your own sandwich?
Never.
Don't bring your own food to a restaurant.
No. And I think one of the things I pointed out in there was with regards to wine and BYO and corkage. And I struggle with it because, sure, I know that there's plenty of collectors out there that have great wines that work well with our food. But you got to remember that while I don't want to sound like I'm money hungry, I'm in business to make a living. And I sell restaurant seats for a living. Mm. And if you're sitting in my seat, I need that seat to make a certain amount of money so that I can pay the rent and the staff and everybody else. If you're sitting there eating something that I'm not going to get revenue from, it's going to change the price of the seat for the next guy that comes in.
That's Jeff Benjamin. He's the author of this new book we've been talking about called Front of the House. He's also managing partner of the Vetri family of six restaurants now here in Philadelphia and also in New Jersey. And he has been working with Mark Vetri since 1998. Their restaurants have gotten, I should say, some high marks over the years. And to join our conversation, again, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And again, we want to hear from diners and also from servers. What do you do if a table of six is kind of lingering past their allotted goodbye time?
There's a couple strategies we employ. And again, it depends on the environment, depends which restaurant of ours you're at. If you're in one of our more casual spots and we have a nice bar scene, and hopefully we can entice the next group to have a drink while they're waiting. We let you go a little bit past what we think you should go to. If you've paid the check and you're just sitting there's a different rule than if you've not paid and you're still enjoying your meal. That's on us. You know, we've timed your meal out. But if it's – if you've ordered a next course or another round of drinks, you know, that's on us to make sure that we're timing it correctly.
Right.
If you've already paid and you're pretty much sipping water, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. You know, you have to be aware that, again, I have to turn that table over. Most people are aware of it. Those that aren't, we do some subtle things. Every once in a while, I'll invite them to the bar for have after-dinner drinks with me. And that usually gives them the hint. I never want to be rude and say, you need to get up and leave. I got people waiting. However, there are those
more
times,
polite ways of sort of more. Essentially saying the same thing.
Would you like to enjoy a drink at the bar? Would you be willing to relocate to another part of the restaurant? You know, better than saying, hey, I've got folks that need to start paying me to sit here.
Then does that come to you naturally to be so polite? Or is that something you had to learn?
I'd like to think a little bit of both. You know, I hope I'm a nice person. Yeah, I'm a Midwesterner.
Does that help?
no offense to you.
That's the stereotype.
But,
anyway.
Yeah, that is the stereotype. People say, oh, you're from Iowa. But, you know, I think years of training in the service industry, you know, you deal with all kinds of people. And as long as you keep everything you do in perspective and understand that it really – what we're doing is we're spending about an hour and a half of time with each and every person. And during that hour and a half, we want to make you as happy as we can. And sometimes we make you happier and sometimes we just keep you status quo.
Do you have manager nightmares? Things that might, you know, wake you up in the middle of the night?
I used to. I think over time I've come to realize that there are many more important things. You know, I've got a wife and two kids and, you know, as long as they're happy, I think that's fine. I do have, you know, I worry about our staff. I worry that they're happy. I spend a lot of time thinking about what can I do to increase business and things like that. But in terms of on a day-to-day management, I used to stress over, oh, my goodness, you know, that special didn't go over well enough or we didn't sell enough of this. It wasn't really great. And or I didn't set the table right, you know. But, you know, over time, we've realized that there's vastly more important things to do.
And can you tell if it's a good night? I mean, sort of you can feel
there's a vibe.
The things are humming and things are working.
You know, you walk in, like I said, I generally get to our restaurants in the middle of service, so there's already something happening. Right. And if I walk in and see the GM smiling at me and come walking up towards me, that's usually a good indicator that things are good. When they walk the other direction, I know they're trying to hide something from me.
A tweet from Rob. He says, the internet has made it too easy to complain. Tell us directly, not Yelp. I mean, I think you can say that for most of life.
I think Rob is absolutely right. I can't fix it once you leave. And that's to me, a big issue. If you've left my four walls, and like you said, in any business, if I'm standing in front of you and you've done something that I know can be fixed, then why wouldn't I bring it up to you? At least if I'm productive about it and say, hey, listen, you know, I was about to buy this and I asked for your help and I didn't get it and I'm trying to figure this out. I go home and I call a bunch of people and tell them about it. What does that do? So basically I've ensured that same mistake is going to happen again to somebody else.
Do you know who all the restaurant critics are? Are you able to recognize them?
Over time, get to see them. And I think, you know, I had a phone call once with the local Philadelphia Inquirer critic, Craig LeBan. And, right. You know, he said, look, Jeff, even if you know who I am, you can't fake good and you can't fake bad. I'll know if you're just having an off night and I'll know if you clearly are just a bad restaurant. I'll also know if you're trying too hard to make it good. I think I pointed out in the book that that the restaurant critic for the New York Times once reviewed a restaurant up in New York and sent someone in to sit at a table further away to see if they had the same experience. And it was glaring that they didn't. And that's also an issue. You can't fake it.
You do include unnamed a critic who did not enjoy his experience at one of your restaurants.
Sure. And I'm not going to discount the fact that he didn't enjoy his experience. And that's been upsetting to me for, you know, look, going on 17 years
it's
now.
It's in the book, right?
But what was upsetting to me was the kind of fallout afterwards. There's a certain amount of – you need to be able to recognize, I think, at that stature of journalism. You know, we were a brand new restaurant, really brand new on the scene at
this
the time.
This is Vetri, right?
Yep. And we had been open for less than 6 months. And it was almost like, let me see how nervous I can make these guys by coming into their restaurant. It was a clear – I mean, I'm pretty good at reading folks and their body gestures and their body language. It was just clear that this wasn't about, let me see what these guys do and I will rate them on it. It was, let me see what I can catch these guys not doing right. And that was just a very discomforting – it set a bad tone for the entire night. But I didn't handle the night well as a relatively new restaurant owner.
You wrote him back.
But – well, Mark did, which I probably should have prevented from happening. But, you know, all's good. It's 17 years later and we're still around. He's still around and we all make a living.
Do you think restaurant critics have too much power, or some of them have too much power, that they really maybe don't give a new restaurant enough chance to sort of work out the kinks, for instance?
You know, I struggle with that because, you know, their job as journalists is to bring the facts. And as long as that's what they're doing, then I'm okay with whatever they write. As long as everything that's written about any restaurant or any chef or a movie, to play, whatever it is you're reviewing, is steeped in fact. Once you start to kind of go off the fact-based stuff and I think, you know, the top-tier critics still have that kind of integrity.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'll read a review and say, wow, that was pretty on point. You know, we did screw that up.
Oh,
interesting. Or I was at that restaurant and I experienced the same thing. You know, I'll get that. I don't think one singular review should ever capsize the boat. And so when that happens, I get concerned, because that shouldn't be the case in anything you do in life.
Well, let's take another short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Jeff Benjamin, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. He's written a new book. It's called Front of the House, Restaurant Manners, Misbehaviors, and Secrets. And he has been working in the restaurant business for many, many years now. In fact, began as a server as a teenager. And now he is a managing partner of the Vetri family of six restaurants here in the Philadelphia area, in the city, and also in New Jersey. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking with Jeff Benjamin about his new book called Front of the House. It's about good and bad customer service in a restaurant. He also has advice about how to be a good restaurant goer, i.e., don't forget, the server is not your servant. And again, if you have any questions or comments, you can join the conversation. And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Interestingly, in this book, and tips have now become this, you know, big topic of conversation. Mm-hmm. At your restaurants, the tips are pooled.
Correct.
What's the thinking behind that?
Let's come back from when I was a server. You know, you could always get that really bad table as a server. It's luck of the draw. I mean, who sits where? But the other thing is, we're a team. And I mentioned in that chapter, one of my least favorite terms in the world is "let me get your server."
Huh.
And oftentimes, I would couch it with, at the Vetri family, no matter how we did it, you'd probably get really good service. But, you know, there are restaurants in the world where if that's not my table, I'm not getting tipped by that table, I'm going to go get the person who is to service you no matter what it is you need. And I think human nature should state that if I need a glass of water and I'm the guy that can make that happen for you, whether I'm getting tipped or not, mm-hmm. I should do it. And I think when you create this team atmosphere, you end up creating the sense of, let's all get this job done. Let's also not forget that if I'm dining at table one tonight and I have Joe as my server, I'm going to return because Joe was such a great server. But the next time I return and dine at table 40 and I have Jim as my server, I have a certain expectation. So why didn't you all just do the same thing with each other? And I shouldn't have that variation.
And are your servers, are they comfortable with that? I mean, the idea is that we're all going to share in this together?
Yeah, I'd hope so. I think over 17 years, the good news is we engage our servers in most of those decisions. So if they weren't, they could either say, we've got an idea to change it, happy to do so. You know, I think at our level of restaurants, typically that's what happens. We're pretty open with our servers, so our servers can say, hey, can we change this? Oh, sure, let's talk about it. I have no horse in that race, so however they want to do it, as long as our service level is at excellent or better.
We have an email from Josh wanting to know how you feel about Restaurant Week, something that happens not just in Philly but other
you
communities,
know,
if I can say.
I think Restaurant Week came from a good place. It was to increase business in restaurants during a time when maybe a part of the summer when business was a little slower. I think that they're done right. And we participate over in Jersey in Morristown, Restaurant Week, because I believe it's done well. Done right, it works out really well. It increases your guest count. But I think it can become something that you didn't want it to become, where you lowered the price of your food, so you now have to double the amount of people that come in, right? I mean, if the economics are the economics, that doesn't change. Your service staff has to work 10 times faster. Your cooks are likely going to be overworked. You also tend to lower the amount of offerings you have, because your higher end items you probably can't offer on the Restaurant Week. Because for those that don't know, the Restaurant Week menu has to be a specific price. And so when you lower that price, in two of our restaurants, it's actually possible to eat there for lower than that price on a normal basis. So it's hard for us to justify to our servers that we're going to do this. So I can't say that I'm completely against Restaurant Week. Right now, I can't wrap my arms around the Vetri family doing it the way they want us to do it.
What do you think has made Philadelphia, now really the region, such a foodie haven? And this goes back a couple of decades.
It goes back a
now.
Long time. And, you know, I think hats off to George Perrier and Jean-Marie Lacroix, who really set the standard here in Philadelphia for a long time. And I think the folks who left them as sous chefs and started their own places, the fact that they chose to stay in Philadelphia to open, and it spawned more. And I jokingly tell Mark he's the old guy now, because if you look around Philadelphia, there's many restaurants where the executive chef used to work for us, and they stayed in Philadelphia. And there's this nice young crop of chefs coming up. You know, I love the competition, and I hope that we still remain relevant. You know, it's somewhat scary that there's tons of great chefs out there.
Well, I wanted to ask you about the fact that, I mean, there people have many choices. Just how competitive does that feel for you?
Well, here in Philadelphia, it's happily competitive. There's such a great camaraderie amongst the restaurant world in this town that, you know, I do events once in a while, charity events, and I'll be with a bunch of other chefs, and we all just kind of hang out together. And I think there's just not this divisiveness. There's still quite a bit more diners than there are chefs. So there's still room for more restaurants. Now, there'll come a point where I may sit at this very table and say, oh, my gosh, I'm panicking, but not just yet.
Let me get looks like Joshua to join us. Joshua calling us from Society Hill. Joshua, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I own a bakery in Center City. And I'm wondering how, and if you have to deal with this too, kind of discerning between real and kind of imagined customer complaints. You know, people sending things back for some reason, but it's actually, that's what the dish is. With cakes.
Oh, is that does that happen a lot for you, Joshua?
I mean, not that much. It's just sometimes people, for us, it's, you know, a more of an at-home experience, so people will call us. Sometimes seeking discounts for future orders and things like that versus, you know, so people are human and sometimes there is an actual issue.
Agreed.
But it's tough to kind of figure out where is that person who's just seeking, you know, something for free versus something happened and we actually need to make it right.
And
maybe you have a different experience because it's in the restaurant.
It's a great question because we're actually talking about this. Go ahead, Jeff.
We discussed it earlier. You're right on the mark. And no, I don't have a different experience because I'm right in the restaurant. And actually, it's a little bit more frustrating for me because I have to deal with it in the moment, whereas you may actually get a phone call and have some time to sit back and take a breath and say, is this for real?
How do you know if it's for real?
It's tough. You have to kind of give the guest the benefit of the doubt that something happened. And, you know, oftentimes I'll say to our service staff or our cooks, did they get exactly what it is we intended for them to get? And that's kind of the benchmark, you know, when it came to the critique that we talked about in the last segment. You know, I'll sleep well at night if I know that the critic had exactly what we intended, and if they just didn't like it, they didn't like it. Simply not liking a dish isn't grounds for complaint. It's grounds for feedback. I didn't particularly care for it. Other people might, but I didn't. The biggest complaint, Joshua, is actually the foodborne illness complaint. I've been blamed for literally every single stomach ache that every one of our guests have ever had. And those are it's a very real concern, you know. But keep in mind that you as a baker and me as a restaurateur, we are held to the health department standards. So we have pretty stringent rules that we need to follow. And I actually employ a consultant that comes and does a fake audit of our health standards on a monthly basis. So, you know, we're pretty hardcore with it, but yet – if I eat something and then have a stomachache an hour later, I blame the restaurant. Well, let's remember how the digestive tract works. So it's hard to – the bigger problem, Joshua, is that you need to be able to diplomatically tell your guests that they're wrong.
and that's
a challenge.
Joshua, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Have you noticed that there are more demands for gluten-free meals and people have more allergies and – That seems more and more. I look at a menu now and it's like gluten-free this or gluten-free that.
I sell gluten for a living. So it's, you know, pasta is how
exactly.
we make our pardon the pun, but our bread and butter. But, you know, Mark, whether famously or infamously, wrote an article about the gluten-free craze. And the truth of the matter is with every kind of decade or so, there's a look, celiac's a very real disease, and
sure.
we need to be aware of it. So we'll address that. But because of some of that, people say, hey, they're healthier. That my friend who has celiac seems healthy. I'm going to start not eating gluten. Well, same thing happened with fad diets and things like that. So not to belittle those who very really have an allergy. And we have addressed it quite a bit. I mean, look, when nut allergies first came to the forefront, we had to be very clear on how we handled – you know, we serve mortadella, which has got pistachio right in the center of it.
Exactly.
You know, it's got to be – you have to be careful. But look, we're professionals. We can handle it.
Let me get – looks like Susan from Westchester to join our conversation. Hi, Susan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just had a question regarding pricing, of all things. I'm wondering if it's ever the server's responsibility to let someone know that something on their menu perhaps is priced per person when everything else on the menu is individually priced. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Susan, I struggle with that a lot.
I don't know what that means.
So basically, when you have – if I'm understanding you correctly, sometimes you'll have a server come up to you and say, here are the specials for the night. And at the end of each special announcement, they announce the price.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Or, for example, we have a steak for two on our menu. Well, the price says $35 PP. So you may order it and say, oh, that was supposed to be $35, but we had, but you had it for two. That's $70. So Susan, you make a really good point, and I do struggle with it because I don't want to be that guy that walks up to the guest and assumes that they are cost conscious, but I also don't want to surprise them at the end of this very good meal. They've had a phenomenal time, and the very last memory of my restaurant is that they thought they got taken to the cleaners because I was disingenuous with my pricing scheme. So one of the things that we kind of inform our service staff to do is if it's out of the ordinary, feel free to inform.
Right.
You know, if everything on the menu is priced between $12 and $20 and you're serving a special that's between that price, then I think it's reasonable to assume the guest was willing to spend that money on that dish. But like you said, if it's priced per person, you know, just casually point out, okay, and that is a per person price. I'm ordering that for two. And then they'll know that you've just alerted – you don't have to tell them what the price is. One of our dishes is the antipasto, which is a vegetable dish that is for one, two, three, four, five – you can have for 10. So you would always respond with, I've just ordered that for three. Is that okay with you?
So that they get it. Susan, thanks for the call. Let me get Katie from Westchester to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Katie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I love everything that you're saying about guest experience and making sure sort of to – that the guest experience is really hospitable and accommodating. I'm wondering what your experience has been with staff behind the scenes. I've been in the restaurant industry a long time, and my experience has been at times that it's sort of the last frontier of bad behavior and unprofessionalism with managers or with chefs, especially as a woman, you know, having sexual comments made or being yelled at in front of guests or bartenders drinking, things like that. And I'm wondering what your experience is and also if you have a philosophy on that.
Katie, thanks for the call to Radio Time. Sorry to hear about that, by the way.
I'm sorry that our industry has been that way. You know, I can't be an apologist for our industry. I think it's awful you've had that experience. But let's remember that everything's kind of top down. So that's on me to fix as the restaurateur and when I was a manager as well. If you've created a culture that allows for that, then shame on you as the owner. There was that time for a long time where the kitchen was almost considered the men's locker room, and having been in gym class and been in a men's locker room, there's some foul language and there's some sexual comments made, and it's just not acceptable. So that's really, if you are currently working in a place where that happens, it's really incumbent upon your manager to have an open door and let you tell them about it, because one of my biggest fears is that I won't know something's happening and I don't get a chance to fix it. I talk a lot about how guest service is what we do. I consider our staff the same as guests. They're our guests as well. They're guests in my home, and their satisfaction is just as important. And I can't hit it 100% of the time. There's going to be times where I make a decision where one server's happy and that means the other one's not. But when it comes to corporate culture, if you've created a culture that allows for demeaning staff, whether it be sexual or racial or religious, that there's no room for that in any industry. And you've – even the most selfish among us should want their staff to be satisfied, because they're going to go out and represent me to the public.
Katie, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Email us, Karen has an email. Actually, it was a question I wanted to ask you, Jeff. She says, what does Jeff think about the noise level in many center city restaurants? Too often it's not possible to have a conversation with table mates without speaking loudly and thus contributing to the noise level.
Once again, I mean, it seems like everyone's coming up with things I do struggle with. You know, you want your restaurant to be bustling, and there's only so much we can do. It also depends on the style of restaurant. So we have a Roman trattoria that's supposed to be loud and kind of boisterous. We do have sound panels all over the restaurant and under the tables. Other than that, there's not a whole lot I can do. Now, for example, if you were to dine at Vetri, I think you have a strong level of expectation that it's going to be quiet in there. And that's not just because of price, but it's because of the style of restaurant that it is. You know, a white tablecloth dining experience should not be have Led Zeppelin playing in the background. Whereas, you know, I think at Amis, you tend to think that that's what's going to happen to bar crowd. But, you know, it's hard to tell someone to be quiet. Also, I don't know if you've ever been in a restaurant that's completely empty and it's really quiet. So you don't want that either, right?
Well, I was wondering about that, whether – and we're almost out of time here – whether the sort of hubbub is creates an inviting atmosphere.
I believe wholeheartedly that it does, but you have to toe the line. I mean, you know, Craig LeMann locally, he famously puts in the decibel level of every restaurant he reviews. You know, and I can debate back and forth whether I think the number is correct. But the reality is there's certain times where you're at a 70, 80 decibel level. That's a great noise, background noise or white noise. But, you know, when you start getting to the 90, 100, 110 and you feel like you're at a rock concert, I can empathize with you.
So are you a good eater?
I try to be. You know, my foundation feeds people, you know, feeds kids healthy, nutritious food. So I try to live what I talk. But it's not always easy.
No, it isn't always easy. Jeff Benjamin, thanks so much for joining us today, Radio Times. And again, the book is called Front of the House: Restaurant Manners, Misbehaviors, and Secrets. And he is a managing partner of the Vetri family of restaurants here in Philadelphia and in New Jersey. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the show. Kevin Griffin and Diana Martinez, the engineers for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens with Quinn Lipson. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, and we're going to close things out with a song from Billy Joel, composed and performed, called Italian Restaurant.
A bottle of white, a bottle of red, perhaps a bottle of rosé instead. Get a table near the street in our old familiar place, you and I face to face. A bottle of red, a bottle of white, it all depends upon your appetite. I'll meet you anytime you